Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Happy Saturday to you. Tomorrow's Palm Sunday. Next week's Easter. I'm giving you the pre-Easter show. Part two on what we started last week, actually what we started 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the immune system and how it interacts with each other, how it's a complicated language, and how that immune system is so important if you've been stricken with cancer. Now, last week I did a show not so much on the primary tumor, meaning the tumor that you hopefully cut out when you get diagnosed. I did the show on something that I think is more pressing and more practical, and that's metastasis. What makes cancer so special is that it's a Frankenstein that we create. It's something that we, through, well, let's just say modern man, the disappearance of our ecosystem, the chemical excesses in our foods, in the water, in the air, enrage our cellular environments to the point where we metamorphosize another form of our own self, our own cell. And that's called cancer. Now, this can grow into a tumor, a large tumor. And as I said on last week's show, you're best advised to cut that tumor out. Because what tumors do, the primary tumor, the tumor you see in the prostate, the tumor you see in the breast, the tumor you see in the brain, in the liver, in the lung, that tumor is seeding. Right from the day it becomes a tumor, it is seeding. It is sending other cells systemically throughout your body. And that seeding, that spread, is called metastasis. Last week I did part one. Today we're going to go after it again. Metastasis. Critical to understand the distinction between you've got a tumor, the original tumor, the place it started, and you got that cut out. And now, of course, it's an issue of will you ever see it come back? This is an area in oncology of mass ambiguity. We give you chemotherapy. We give you radiation. We give you a bunch of things to hopefully prevent the recurrence. And overall, I think oncology knows it doesn't do so well preventing recurrence with chemotherapy, preventing recurrence with radiation. What we do have is some tumors, if you catch them early enough, they haven't had enough of a chance to seed, to continually spread cancerous cells to distant sites. And without enough time to do it, catching it early enough, cutting the tumor out early enough, your chances of survival past 5 years are much, much greater. So everybody agrees prevention is the best remedy. Well, prevention, don't get it, but prevention meaning early detection. And that's what your doctors tell you, and that's very, very good advice. To catch a tumor in the first 4 months is so much better than catching that tumor after a year, after 2 years, because that tumor is constantly sending out millions of cells. Now, those of you who have listened to my show over the years, you're going to be familiar with a lot of the terms that I use today. Those of you who are new to the show, just tuned in on the radio while driving, welcome. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is a teaching hour. It's not a selling hour. It's a teaching hour. And what I'm asking our community to do is to get a deeper understanding of some of the intricacies of metastasis. Why? Because if, God forbid, you ever have to face these decisions, and I kid you not, I watch people do this all the time, your ignorance, your lack of understanding is devastating as you make your choices. Watching someone get that knock on the door, being told they have a tumor, from that onward over the years is a very harsh process because people just don't have insight. And I don't think it's that hard to have insight. I think understanding your body, understanding cancer is just something you do, just like you do everything else. So the intention of this series I'm doing on the immune system and on cancer is to remedy what I see happen all too often. People get paralyzed in fear once they get a diagnosis, and then they make a series of really ridiculous decisions based on those fears, based on their lack of education. Okay, onward. Metastasis. You've had the tumor cut out. And I'm going to, again, like last week, what I'm going to do is interject these little clinical pearls, or I'm going to try to straighten out some misconceptions. I'm going to try to clarify misunderstandings that I see occur all the time when doctors talk to patients regarding cancer. When your oncologist tells you, we got it, we cut it out, it's gone, you're in remission, don't worry about it. What that really means as opposed to reality. So we're going to cut in today. So bear with the abruptness at times when I have to make an insert so you can deepen your understanding. First, the primary site, the tumor in the breast, the tumor in the lung, the tumor in the liver, the tumor in the brain. We call that the primary tumor. We're not dealing with that. Hopefully you get that cut. After it's cut out and after you do whatever therapies you do after that, your doctor will tell you often, the cancer's gone. Do not be concerned because we got it all. Just go about your normal way of life. The reason this is so absolutely deceiving, and what you have to understand and what you have to ask your oncologist, what you have to research yourself, is what we call the 5-year survival rate. This means after you've cut out the tumor and done whatever you're going to do after that, whether you elect to do chemo, whether you're told to do chemo, whether you're told to do radiation or not, what you have to find out based upon the type of cancer you have, little insert, all cancers are different. Let's get rid of this notion immediately that cancer's cancer. In some senses it is, but in many, many clinically important senses, no cancer is the same in any one person. Breast cancer is not brain cancer, is not pancreatic cancer. Cancer is not cancer. And when you jump into the holistic model, and you listen to doctors of sorts talk about what you can do about cancer and preventing it and so on and so forth, they tend to clump it into one generalized package. And sometimes that's good, and a lot of times that is not good. How you work with pancreatic cancer and how you work with a stage 1 or a stage 0 breast cancer have absolutely nothing to do with each other. How you work with an astrocytoma of the brain and colon cancer have nothing to do with each other. So let's understand from the beginning that cancer is very specific to the individual, and that just in terms of the differences between cancers in different organs, you're talking about enormously different ways of approaching it. But let's continue now. Wherever you've had your cancer, that tumor's been taken out. The doctor tells you you're in remission, you're fine. The scans show no cancer. We don't see it in the lymph nodes. Now, the reason this is deceptive is because what you have to do and see in writing is what your five-year survival rate is. You have to find exactly the type of cancer you have at exactly what stage it is and see a statistic that says of these people that have exactly this cancer at exactly this stage, what percentage are alive in 5 years and what percentage are dead? It's called your five-year survival rate. I rarely see anybody get this. I rarely see anybody ask about this, and I rarely see anybody given this. Now, that's wrong. That's negligence on the part of everyone. But what I think a lot of doctors think is, why tell people that over 5 years you may have 40% chance of being alive? Why tell them that when there's nothing they can do about it anyway? Now, we're getting into a gray zone here. Any of you who have had a loved one, any of you who are suffering with this now, it is natural and human to be afraid. And we all know the way the model works. You never get enough time with your doctors anyway. But what across the board you almost never hear. You hear it if you've got 2 months to live. Then you hear it. But if you've got over 5 years, a 50% chance of being dead, and you are presently in remission because you did what you were supposed to do, what they told you you were supposed to do, I rarely see anybody tell you your odds across 5 years. And the reason, well, one, this is wrong. Two, the reason you're not told is more than likely that in their minds, there's nothing you can do to influence the recurrence. Now, that's an assumption. Their own literature. The medical literature. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 5 articles today. I could have put 500 articles today. Hard science, well-designed studies, pointing to all the things you can do to maximize your health, to minimize the possibilities of recurrence. But if none of that is respected, then the reasonable choice is just to do your standard chemo, your standard radiation. Maybe now we'll give you a little immunotherapy and send you on your way. Why worry you with the fact that over 5 years, you've got a 50% chance if that's the case? Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But why worry you with that statistic since there's nothing you can do about it anyway? That is the travesty. Because in the medical literature, it will tell you there's much you can do. I'll give you one simple example, and it's so glaringly obvious that it's not arguable. Any study of cancer, any study of metastasis will tell you that the aggressivity of the immune system has a lot to do with whether or not you metastasize or not. And any study that's ever been done on sleep and its relationship to a healthy immune system, an aggressive immune system, a reactionary immune system, a balanced immune system, any study ever done on sleep will tell you, you want a healthy immune system, a powerful immune system, you get your sleep. Obesity and its ability to put so much burden on the immune system, there's no immune system for your cancer. There, sleep and obesity. Now, right there, in the literature, unabound, are dozens of studies, well-designed, well-credentialed, NIH-certified, indicating there's just two examples of what you can do to make sure to minimize the prospect of recurrence. Well, wouldn't you want to have that emphasized if over 5 years, after the surgery, after the chemo, after the radiation, wouldn't you want to know what you could do that's backed hard by science to minimize on your side of the fence that 50-50 five-year recurrence probability? And this is my point. You're not given these numbers. You don't understand this. Insert. What's that word? Hashtag now everybody use? Maybe I should say hashtag, although I'd probably get nauseous. I'm going to say insert. Here's the insert. If you study the literature, I don't care how early they get it. If you have a tumor, that tumor has been disseminating cancer cells for quite a while. Now, yes, you want to catch that tumor early. Yes, you want to cut it out. Yes, you want to get it when it's small. But this notion that, okay, insert, we scan the lymph and it's not in the lymph, therefore it didn't get to the lymph, this is nonsense. What they're saying when they tell you it didn't get to the lymph is that you don't have gross invasion of cancer into the lymph. And with gross technology, ultrasound technology and whatnot, with gross diagnostic technology, we don't see it in the lymph, so we'll call it a stage zero. So let me repeat that. When you're told that the cancer has not spread into the lymph node, what they mean is that on gross investigation, they can't find any in the lymph node. That really has nothing to do with another reality that you will read abundantly in the literature, and that is that those little cancer cells, they love to chip off the mother cell, and they start flying. They fly to the lymph. They also more than likely fly straight into the blood supply. Now, there's another insert. To say we got it and it didn't get into the lymph is wrong for two reasons. One, it may be so small. It may have traveled through the lymph. So what? They investigate or cut out a sentinel node. When you get a tumor taken out, sometimes they're going to take out some of the main lymph nodes and then dissect them out. And the concept is if they don't find upon microscopic dissection of a local lymph node, even more possibly a sentinel lymph node, a main node, the first node, reason dictates, the cancer cell breaking off from the mother will actually invade. If they don't see it in that sentinel node, they'll tell you it's not there. They don't know that. They don't know it for two reasons. One, it may have gone into that node. A bunch may have gone into that node and moved through the node. There's number one. Number two, and this is way more important, lots of cancer cells don't go to the lymph. They go to the microvasculature. They'll go into the blood. They'll start with little capillaries into bigger capillaries into the mainstream of your body. So you got to get the language straight from the beginning. And if it was me, if I were you, I would do what your doctors tell you. I'm not going to get into that. You make your choices. I would definitely be cutting out the main tumor, unless the cost of it was enormous. But that's me. Here's my point to you. If you've had a tumor, you have to know your odds. And number two, you have to just assume that those cells have spread, which means it's your wake-up call to get healthy. And getting healthy is a lot of fun. And frankly, as weird as this sounds, understanding the genius of cancer and the genius of our body, our body's innate mechanisms, according to the literature, if employed, can go against the prospect of metastasis. Now, last week, I asked you to consider the following. And I think the best way to do it is to get on picture number two. Those of you new to the show, just driving, obviously you can't get on straighttalk.cc, not .com, .cc. That's Straight Talk with two T's. Those of you who can, please get on the website. Look at picture number two. Those of you who can't, I'll describe it to you when you can. I design these shows so that you have to listen to them again. Not because I want to design them, but because this is all new to you. But if you digest this stuff, it will give you such an advantage in the trenches. So picture number two. Let's understand this. A cancer cell breaks off from the primary site, the tumor. The tumor that's so small you didn't detect it yet. And what it does is something called intravasation. Intravasation, weird word, which just means it eats its way into the capillary system. Now, very important and backed up by the literature is the fact that this is not a particularly efficient process relative to the next process, which I'll discuss in a moment. Better said, when that cancer cell, as millions of them do, breaks off the initial tumor, it goes up to the capillary and pushes the endothelial cells of the capillary apart and digs its way into your circulation. Once it's in your circulation, it's more than likely to get killed. Right from the beginning, cancer fights, and right from the beginning, we fight. Right from the beginning, cancer faces a very inefficient set of mechanisms. It hoists its sails, cancer. It leaves the primary site and begins to metastasize and jumps into a very, very, very raging storm. Your body has lots of defenses to cancer. And that's critical to understand, because it just might be that it's possible to optimize those systems. And so, as I said last week, once you intravasate, in other words, once that cell, that cancer cell, eats through the capillary wall and goes into the systemic circulation, number one, the cancer cell is generally too big and gets stuck. And the minute it gets stuck, it's going to get clobbered. It's going to die. It's going to explode. So just because of the size of the cancer cell and the more limited size of the capillary that the cancer cell has eaten itself into, so to speak, the cancer cell will suffocate itself. In the tiny little hole, it just made a big mistake of lodging itself into. Now, if that doesn't get it, what they call shear stress will. Shear stress is the scissoring calamitous effect. Shear stress is what a scissors does to a piece of paper. And what you call turbulence and shear stress in the blood slices the cancer cell in two. Chalk one up to our side. Chalk suffocating that cancer cell in a tiny capillary to our side. Now, as I pointed out last week, so some of this is a review. We're going to get to lots of new stuff. But shear stress is directly proportional to the viscosity of the blood. It's inversely proportional to the viscosity of the blood. Viscosity. The blood's got to flow to create shear stress. If your blood is too thick, if your blood has not been thinned, it's to cancer's advantage. The metastatic cell is less likely to get exploded if the blood's not moving. And of course, this beckons to our notion of blood viscosity. Blood viscosity, whether it's Chinese medicine, Vedic medicine, any natural medicine, any Eastern medicine, any Western medicine that uses science to find principles upon which the body uses its own natural mechanisms, will respect the notion of blood viscosity. There are hematologists that respect the notion of blood viscosity. Critical to understand that if your blood's too thick, if the viscosity is too high, you're going to pool or be more likely to pool arterial and or venous blood. And once you pool it, you're less likely to shear the cancer cell. Now, once the blood pools, it's more likely then to create an immune system frenzy. And in that frenzy, meaning once that cancer cell, that metastasized cell, has slowed down into a lazier pool of blood because the blood is too viscous, it's much more likely, through a couple of different types of chemicals, to adhere to the wall of the artery. And it will surround itself with platelets. It's figured out a way, a metastatic cancer cell on the run. It's figured out a way to protect itself with your own body's platelets. It starts, in a sense, to create its own version of a clot. I'll say it different. It starts, in a way, to create a sludge bar around it, to protect itself or to protect a group of cancer cells that have all clumped together on the inside of that artery or that capillary that it escaped through. Now, once it's there, it's a clump. It's a clump of thick blood, and therefore it is a clump of fibrin. And that should ring a bell for my regular audience, because once again, we're facing the fibrin issue. Don't think that that little clump of escaped tumor cells, that group or that single cell, is not an inflammatory entity. Don't think that the immune system doesn't go after it. And in that, all of this inflammatory cascade will begin right there. That cancer cell clumped on the inside of that capillary, trying to escape, to disseminate throughout your body and ultimately find some organ to invest. Don't think that that does not signal an immune system pro-inflammatory response. And the very fibrin that forms in response to that pro-inflammatory mass is the protective shield, along with a bunch of platelets, along with very thick, viscous blood, to hide that cancer cell as it figures out a way to eat itself out of the capillary and into some target organ, into the intercellular space of the next organ it invades. Now, that's what you have there on picture number two. You have a cancer cell that's intravasating into a capillary, and then it sticks there, and then it figures out how to extravasate itself into the intercellular space of the organ it's going to metastasize to. It enters, it adheres to the wall, it protects itself, and then it leaves. You got to understand that, because you got to take care of the issue of blood viscosity. You've got to take care of those things that you can eat, those nutraceuticals you can take, to break down the fibrin. If you tend to your blood viscosity and you tend to the fibrin, you are fighting cancer. You are making it more difficult for those escaped cells to find a wall to adhere to. Now, you know, in the literature, they'll talk about using warfarin. Warfarin is rat poison. But in the literature, it will tell you warfarin actually breaks up, makes it more difficult for escapee cancer cells as they metastasize to adhere to the capillary walls. It's an area of study. It's actually an area of old study. But what is warfarin? It's a blood thinner. Now, they don't attribute warfarin's blood thinning qualities to the fact that it tends to prevent adhesion to the capillary wall. They give credit to other chemical aspects of warfarin in relationship to the little adhesions that form. But nonetheless, warfarin is still a potent blood thinner. And it begs the issue of viscosity once again. Warfarin thins the blood. So does nonokinase. So does green juice. So does moving the body. So does opening up pockets or areas within the vasculature that might otherwise find themselves heavily compromised in terms of flow. If you broke a shoulder, if you've had accidents, just the simple, low-level, basic analysis of blood. Just understanding that the blood can be a vector for the metastatic cancer cell. The blood either receives the metastatic cancer cell and says, we're all ready for you. We're going to facilitate you. We're too thick. We're too dark. We don't have enough oxygen. We're already filled with all the sludge you need to hide yourself from the innate immune system, the dendritic cell, the NK cell. You're so overloaded already. We're just waiting to facilitate your flow. Your blood can work for you or work against you on this basis. Now, I've put articles up there to support these statements. This isn't a holistic approach in the sense that it's in the literature. If you go up, I'm not going to do this right now. I went through this article last week, but if you go into click to view the article on metastasis early hours, it's going to talk about shear stress. It's going to talk about fibrin. It's going to lay down the principles I just laid down for you in short terms. Now let's continue. Here's even better news. And this is all over the literature. The better news is this. Actually, they call the journey of the cancer cell through the capillary, with all the treachery that can occur there, they call that the most efficient part of cancer's journey. They call that journey of the cancer cell through the capillary, through the vasculature, the most efficient part. Statistically, you may have a much higher survival rate in that journey than you're going to have once the cancer cell breaks through the endothelial wall and infests an organ. That's where we really have some defense. I should find that stat. I think that's going to take too long for me to actually go into one of those articles. In cancer and acidic pH, there is an article. I'm going to try to get it before the show is over. There's actually a statistic in there that shows that cancer, as it metastasizes, really has, relatively speaking, an easy time as it circulates through the blood. And where really cancer finds its challenge, where it really finds its challenge, is when it starts to disseminate into the area around the organs. That's when the statistics really, really shift. And you've got like far less than half of 1% probability that a cancer cell is actually going to be able to get into the intercellular space and start to grow a tumor. here it is. I'm going to actually show you this. I've got it right here. I'm going to do this. If you go click to view the full article, I want you to get this. I really want you to see how against the odds metastasis is. Go to the top of the website, and I put on five articles. Go to the bottom article. If you're just driving, just listen. We're going to quote from an article here. This is dissemination and growth of cancer cells in metastatic sites. Scroll down one page, two pages, three pages, four pages, five pages. You're going to have to go down one page, two pages, three pages, four pages, five, six, page seven. You're going to have to scroll down seven full pages. You can do this. You can definitely get this. Scroll down seven pages, and if you scroll down seven pages, it's going to say on the bottom right, page 569. Page 569, you got to scroll down seven pages. You can get this. So you got to go into that picture, that dissemination and growth of cancer cells in metastatic sites. That's my last article. You're going to go to the seventh page on the top, and it's simply going to say, it's simply going to say, 3 days after injection, this is at the bottom. I'm going to start at the bottom of that paragraph on the left. This is page seven of that article, way on the bottom, dissemination of cancer cells. This is worth it. This is what I love. This is what you have to love. Because if you dig, you're going to find amazing things. 3 days after injection. This is an article where they've simulated a cancer scenario, and they're injecting cancer into an animal. 3 days after injection, 83% of the cells that were originally injected had extravasated into the liver. Now, I want you to understand that. 83% of the cells that got injected into the blood. So they just went straight forward, took a bunch of cancer, injected right into that blood. And those cells are metastasizing. 83% hit the organ. I talk to you about blood viscosity, about breaking down the fibrin, about all sorts of things that fight it. NK cells, dendritic cells jump on it. This is stating that in their study, 83% of those cells they injected into the supply, into the blood supply, made it into the organs, in this case the liver. Now check this out. But only a very small portion of them, 2%, formed micrometastasis. That's like saying 83 get into the blood, 83 get into the liver, and only a couple of them actually form a micrometastasis. Now check this out. Furthermore, not all of these micrometastases persisted, and the progressively growing metastases that would have killed the mice arose from a tiny subset that represented 0.02% of the injected cells. All right, if that's confusing to you, go back and read the article. Get on that website. That's straighttalk.cc. Look at what I've underlined. Read the article yourself and think. Apply yourself. Because this is where all the action is. It's telling you if you inject a boatload of cancer cells into the capillaries, only a small percentage are ever going to get to the organ. And of the ones that do, only the micro percentage of those will ever form a metastasis. And what I want to impress upon you is cancer's got to work hard to metastasize. It's got to work hard. So everything from blood viscosity to breaking down fibrin to an upregulation of your immune system in the blood is on your side. And then we've got to consider what might be on your side once it does get to a target organ. What's on your side? What systems can you fortify yourself with? Where are you just going to lose? Right now, where genetic engineering is coming in, is once that cancer cell is in your organ, it's got a lot of tricks to throw off the immune system. It starts playing games so your immune system doesn't see it. I'm going to leave that for a separate show. That is a very cutting-edge inquiry in science right now. And it's why, if you have cancer and they tell you or you ask about immunotherapy, maybe if you have a tumor and that tumor has been cut out and you feel or your oncologist feels that it's had and it's happened a little late and you've got bad statistics or statistics you're not comfortable with regarding your 5-year survival rate, maybe what you do then is you start scanning the literature for immunotherapy. That's what I would do. It's smart to do that. But you've got to have the understanding. That's why I do this show. You will not get optimal outcome if you, the American public, do not understand, do not take the time to understand the depth of what you face. And you can make it so much easier because you're already into your health. You're already into your health. I have about 24 different newsletters. All those companies out there on the radio that are advertising their herbs and their supplements for the magic that they do. Not going to knock it. God bless them. God bless you in your journey. But when you're dealing with more complicated issues, statistically relegating your inquiry to simply, oh, I've got a problem. What supplement can I take? You are probably going to need a lot more help. You're facing a navigation issue. And it's not that you can do it alone, because generally it's very difficult to do it alone. If you understand a lot about the stock market, you still have a broker. If you've got money that you want invested, hopefully you understand enough about who you're giving it to and how to invest. But you still give it to an investor. That's the way you have to look at your health. You have to study health, heart disease, cancer, autoimmune disease. There's lots of commonality in the defenses the body brings to all disease. That's for you to study. That's the high information step you have to take. And then you make relationship. You make relationship with your oncologist. You make relationship with your naturopath, your nutritionist, your acupuncturist. And you work in an integrated manner, because this is where medicine is going. It has to integrate. You can't push to the wayside innate mechanisms that the body already utilizes and just lean on a synthetic therapy. And you don't even know how to choose a synthetic therapy if you don't understand what you're facing. Case in point, immunotherapy. Immunotherapy, after you've had that tumor cut out, and you risk metastasis a few years later, 3 years later, 5 years later. Metastasis does not occur only up to 5 years. It can occur 10 years later. And it can occur in a very clever way that fools the immune system. But immunotherapy is working. It does promise us a possibility of genetically engineering your own immune cells to get on the other side of the sneaky tricks cancer plays. Even without that, look at the statistic I gave you. 83% of what you inject in this study, so you can't generalize, but the point should be well taken. The odds of cancer surviving the blood are way better, and they're not so great, but they're way better than the odds of that cell surviving what it takes to set up cancer and form a micrometastasis in the organ. Once it's got the job of trying to set up in the organ, you're talking about a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what invaded in the first place. Now let's get into what controls that. We won't be able to get into all of it, but we'll be able to take a couple of important touches on this. And then we got to see if we're going to go for this. Next week's Easter. I won't do the show on Easter Sunday. I mean, next week on Holy Saturday. I'll do something different, but we might have to pick this up later. But what does the body already give you that's in the literature to fend off metastasis, meaning the growth of it now, once it hits its target organ? If it's gone to the liver, if it's gone to the lung, if it's gone to the bone, wherever it's gone from wherever it started, what's the body already putting there to stop it? This is important. Go up, click to view the full article on cancer and acidic pH. Acidic extracellular microenvironment in cancer. Now, this is this pH thing. And we got to be careful with this pH thing, because we have extrapolated out of it in holistic medicine in a not so intelligent way. We have people growing tumors and they're told, or they understand, that as long as the dipstick in the urine or the saliva stick says their blood's alkaline, their intracellular fluids, if their saliva is alkaline, they're told if their urine is alkaline, that their body's alkaline, meaning the extracellular microenvironment is alkaline and therefore cancer can't grow. This is nonsense. This pH thing needs to get clarified. And the reason it's so persistent is it's partly true and it's partly not true. When pathology talks about how a tumor's intracellular environment, that means a tumor encapsulated with a layer of snot, like a biofilm, if you go in there in between the cells of the tumor, which are multiplying and possibly metastasizing, when you go in there inside that tumor in between the cells, that's the extracellular microenvironment. And when you go in there into those places, if you go in there and measure the pH because of all the lactic acid, the lactate that's produced from the anaerobic glycolysis, the acidity is going to be very high. Your pH there is going to be very low. But you have to understand that that tumor is a microorganism that has shielded itself successfully from the rest of the body. And when you start doing the things you're supposed to do to alkalize your body and then take another leap of faith that your saliva or that your urine off the measurement is in the alkaline and therefore you're safe, your tumor's not going to grow, don't believe that. That is nonsense. I don't think that bears fruit clinically. I don't think that's how it's seen, nor does it make any sense. There is a distinction between what's going on in that walled-off tumor that's causing metastasis and tumor growth. There's a distinction between that and what's going on outside the tumor. Yes, you may well be able to affect, you certainly can affect the pH of the extracellular fluid outside the tumor. But that's not really what the point is. You want to affect it inside the tumor. And you're not going to be doing that so easily. I could do a whole show on this, but my point is there was a guy named Otto Warburg and extrapolated out of Warburg was cancer cannot live in an alkaline environment. And all sorts of stuff around that. And if you really study the Warburg effect and what that means, you really wonder how they took this leap of faith into a completely different realm. And if you watch people over the years go to their grave with alkaline pHs and tumors that didn't care less, couldn't have cared less about balanced pH, it makes you wonder. And I'm trying to seed you now today with an understanding that when you're talking about a tumor encased in a sheath of fibrin, maybe 27 layers thick, it's its own ecosystem. And it is operating independently of the rest of the body. So, yes, this article over here is going to talk about the acidic extracellular microbiome. And it's going to say, I underlined, an acidic extracellular pH activates lysosomes, also induces the expression of certain genes of pro-metastatic factors through an intercellular signaling cascade that is different from hypoxia. It's even starting to make another important distinction, the distinction between oxygen and pH. You may have tons of oxygen around and a very acidic pH anyway. So they're making a distinction. But the point is this. They're saying in this article here that inside the tumor, you have a self-generating macro machine of acidity. And that that acidity is promoting the growth of the tumor and metastasis. That's true. Don't extrapolate out of that. Well, if my pH paper from the saliva or the urine is alkaline, it means I've knocked that tumor in the eyeball. You haven't done squat to that tumor. Not in the way you would like. Not in the way lots of people in holistic medicine have inferred. Which doesn't mean it's bad to do. That's the other point. So let's look to the other side of this now. Because the natural mechanism of alkalinity prevents the seeding, but it doesn't destroy the tumor. And this is where you got to catch the distinction. So this is a high information voter concept. This is a high information voter show. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you're listening on the radio, if you're listening while you're sewing, while you're doing something else, you have to get to the website when you can. That's straighttalk.cc. So you can look at the pictures, you can look at the articles, and you can start to think. And those of you spinning and just throwing up your hands, if you've been around the block too many times, you haven't gotten insight, if you're ready, 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Give my office a call, come in, do a consult with me, and we will put you on the right track and take it from there. We give as much as you can take. Read this article, the downside of which, as I said, is a tumor is immune to your acid alkaline query. But here's the upside of it. If you can keep the foundation, the general foundation of the body, meaning the area in the body outside the tumor, if you can keep that extracellular space much more alkaline, if you can regulate those pHs there, you will limit metastasis. Alkalinity in the extracellular space fights a tumor cell that's planting itself and trying to grow a little baby tumor. That's where your body's alkaline mechanisms are working for you. Which is not to say, again I repeat myself, that if you're trying to dissolve a tumor encased away from that alkalinity, you're making a mistake. Can you get the distinction? If you can get the distinction, you pat yourself on the back, because now you're a high information voter. Now you are a nutritional devotee that can start to get distinctions. So you can make some sense out of this melee. If you ask your oncologist about your tumor and about alkalizing your body to limit the growth of the tumor, he's going to laugh at you. But he should not laugh at you after that tumor's taken out, when you bring to his attention the possibility of keeping the extracellular space throughout the entire body in a more alkaline state. It is wrong to laugh at that. Don't you feel better? We could do 20 shows on this. I have a few minutes here. Read through that article. It supports alkalinity in the extracellular space. And it supports it in the right way. Here's another one. Picture number 8. This is Dr. Hammer. Rietgerd Hammer. He's a German oncologist. Had his life changed. Had the tragedy of having his son murdered. And then he came down with a cancer shortly thereafter, after his son was murdered. And that made him different, because he left normal oncology and started to understand the relationship between the sympathetic nervous system and cancer. Listen, the last show I did 2 shows ago on the immune system, the show I did last week, the show I did today, flush it all down the toilet. Next to the importance and influence of having a balanced nervous system to limit or prevent metastasis. The articles are out there. They're everywhere. I've got 2 there. Cancer and sympathetic dominance, cancer and sympathetic dominance. I want you to read those articles. Again, it's basically saying what you already know, but you have to apply precision to what you already know. It's saying that if you're sympathetic dominant, if your stress levels have overridden your immune system, if your stress levels have kaputted your natural protective physiological mechanisms, if your stress levels have hit the top of the chart, if you are what we call sympathetic dominant, you have to get that house in order. There is never enough time. Please read the articles. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. Read about the autonomics. Read about the acidic microenvironments. Read about the immune system. 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. If you're lost and need to be put on track, give us a call. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.